Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Season 5 of In Search of Tarot. Today marks Episode 56 of the show, and I am just so honored that you are even listening right now and so appreciative of your support over the past 2 years. This show has taught me so much and introduced me to so many amazing people, and I'm just really, really grateful for it. So as a way of commemorating how far the show has come, we've decided to kick off this season by inviting several past guests to return and speak with us again, all of whom have gone on to write books since last we spoke. And our first guest today is Brittany Muller, who goes by Blessed Vigil on Instagram. Brittany and I spoke back in April of 2021, and since then she has written a new book called The Contemplative Tarot, A Christian Guide to the Cards, which was just published this past Tuesday, September 13th, by St. Martin's Press. Brittany is an Austin-based writer and an enthusiastic believer in the beautiful strangeness of Christianity. A devout Catholic with an equally devout sense of curiosity, her favorite pastime is finding new ways to think about God. And you're going to hear us discuss some of these concepts along with many others in our conversation together. I was so grateful to Brittany for taking the time out to speak with me in the midst of her busy book publishing schedule, as well as her pregnancy. And I know you're going to really love listening to this beautifully contemplative conversation that we had. So enjoy. Brittany, welcome back to In Search of Tarot.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here and coming back. And, you know, when we spoke, I guess a little over a year ago, we talked a lot about your kind of entry point into tarot and your journey through Christianity. So I'm going to kind of allow people to go back and listen to that first episode to get more of that, you know, backstory. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I was thinking of how to sort of open this conversation today. And in your bio at the back of the book that we're going to be discussing today, your new book, The Contemplative Tarot, you describe yourself as, quote, an enthusiastic believer in the beautiful strangeness of Christianity, which I really loved that phrase. Mm-hmm. And that your favorite pastime is finding new ways to think about God. So when I read that, I realized that it might be important to frame this conversation today with an understanding of exactly how you do think about God, you know? Mm-hmm. So will you kind of open up by telling us, you know, how you would define or describe what God is?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thank you for your kind words about my bio. It was so hard for me to write.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it was harder for me to write like 100-word bio about myself than it was for me to write the whole book. How do I think about God? I love mystery. And for me, God feels like the greatest mystery. I sort of grew up in Christianity, as we talked about, in like my previous chat with you. And when I go to Mass every week, we recite the Nicene Creed. And the first line of the Nicene Creed is, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. And so I feel like as a kid, that was really like sort of my conception of God. And I feel like the older I get, the bigger God becomes and the more mysterious God becomes. And for me, the more expansive God becomes for me, the more God makes sense to me. So like I have like a really great spiritual concept of God as Father, but I also think of God as Mother. And like the more I sort of like ideas of, I don't know, the more like interesting it is to me. Mm-hmm. It's actually, it feels really hard for me to define God. Yeah. But for me, it's like the spiritual lens through like which I see everything or try to see everything.
Yeah. I mean, Well, first of all, I wanted to say that in your book, when I was reading it, I definitely picked up on an expansion around gender with God. Mm-hmm. And even with the court cards, the way that you use different pronouns and, you know, different, mm-hmm. different saints with different gender, you know, received gender. And, you know, also it occurs to me as you're speaking about this, that you're a writer, you know, and so it's interesting that you're a writer who writes about God, and yet God is kind of undefinable, you know? Mm-hmm. And so do you feel tension in that when you write about God and try to put God into words?
Yeah, I do. But I also I find it really interesting, and I like writing about God because I feel like my ideas about God are always changing, and it's really fun to sort of trace the through line, my ideas about God. And I think I've also learned in the last few years, and sort of like writing about God, like more seriously and like mm-hmm. for other people, like cultivate a real spirit of humility. Like I try to hold any ideas I have about God very lightly.
And then similarly, because we're speaking today about this contemplative tarot, which just got published this past Tuesday by St. Martin's Press, it also feels important to frame what the word contemplative means to you. So how mm-hmm. would you sort of define or describe contemplativeness?
I think of it as looking for God in every moment of my day. And I think of it a lot in terms of like an interior stillness, because I'm a very busy person. I'm a very distractible kind of person. Mm-hmm. And I think we also live in a culture that sort of works to distract us from silence, from prayer, if you want to call it that, from any sort of interior stillness. And so for me, I think that tarot as a ritual is really good at cultivating that sort of interior silence where you can hear God or think about God or, you know, connect yourself to something bigger than whatever is happening like in the immediate moment.
So with the writing of this book, you know, you enter into what is kind of already a pretty niche market, you know, with books on tarot, and then you mm-hmm. go into an even deeper niche in that niche, you know, writing a Christian book on tarot. And mm-hmm. So I'm wondering just, you know, what made you kind of want to write this book, and how do you see this book situated within that super niche, which does include, you know, books like Meditations on the Tarot and mm-hmm. Tarot for Christians, you know, just, mm-hmm. just how do you see this book situated within those books?
Well, I feel like for me, I really wrote the book that I wanted to read that I couldn't find anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I had been talking about for several years tarot and Christianity on Instagram. And for me, tarot was really the bridge that led me back to Christianity after a lot of time outside of organized religion. And it was shocking to me to find other people who also felt that way. But like you said, it's an extremely niche market, and there's not a lot there. And I read Meditations on the Tarot, and I feel like it changed my life. Like, it's an incredible book, but it's extremely dense. It's mm-hmm. very philosophical. It's very esoteric. And I felt like there wasn't a book currently in print that sort of offer people something a little easier to jump into. I wanted to write a book that people could read and not feel intimidated by, because I feel like the idea of pairing tarot and Christianity is already like really weird, kind of out there. And I wanted something that was very clearly written for people who were interested in the idea, but didn't really have any foundation for how it might work.
Yeah. Although as you write in the book, I mean, it's interesting because tarot did come into existence in a time when the Catholic Church was very prominent, you know, mm-hmm. so it is kind of interesting to situate it, you know, in that mm-hmm. way, in that way that it probably would have been thought about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So in the introduction, you write that you personally have not tended to use tarot or ever use tarot for divination, mm-hmm. because you don't believe in divination, which is something that I also, you know, have always felt. But I wanted to talk to you about something that one of my guests from last season brought up, Angeliska Polacek, who, when I sort of said that this same sentiment to her, she posited back to me, you know, that she had never thought of divination as prediction, that it really had always meant communing with the divine, you know, more the pure
fascinating
sense of, I know the pure sense of the word, just divination. And and actually, when I heard that, it actually expanded my own, because I identify as non-binary, and it expanded my own sense of divine masculine, divine feminine, you know, as maybe like a verb, you know, that you are divining masculine and you are divining feminine.
That's amazing. Okay, I'm gonna have to go back and find this interview and listen to it.
Yeah, it really did blow my mind. So yeah, I guess I'm just wondering, like have you ever considered that, or like, just how do you feel about, you know, that idea of like divining with God, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've never thought about it in that way, but yeah, like I guess the roots of the word, like they're the same. Like that does make a lot of sense to me. For me, I always felt uncomfortable with divination just because like predict the future. But I do believe that like the way I use tarot helps me to like talk to God. And it's interesting because I feel like a lot of Christians who are deeply opposed to tarot also feel that way. Like I have Christians in my DMs sometimes telling me that like you shouldn't mess with tarot because you're going to like call in like evil spirits or something. Like even Christians believe that there is some like something there, some ability that tarot has to commune with like spirits,
right? You
know, whether they be like good or evil. Anyway, that's fascinating.
Yeah. And I mean, it's also interesting because, well, two thoughts come to mind. So one is that for the first time in my life this past year, I got an email from a random Christian. It was actually the parent of a former student of mine. Yeah. Telling me that she had discovered my website and that she thought that I should look into the history of tarot so that I could better understand the evil that gave it its power. And I wasn't going to respond at all at first. And then I wrote back and I was like, it's funny that you suggested that I should look at the history, because I'm actually pretty obsessed with the history of tarot. And, you know, some of that history that made it into like a quote unquote evil thing is actually really directly tied to the way the church, you know, viewed it. The fear that the church had around people having the ability to divine, or the idea that people could be their own gods, I guess, or whatever, you know? So, yeah. So it's kind of interesting. And I'm wondering like how you, if you ever wonder about that or think about that in terms of the hesitancy that, again, that I also grew up in, of, you know, thinking that you could be predictive in any way or divining or any of that, you know, have you ever kind of pick that apart for yourself of where does this fear come from for me, you know?
Yeah, for me, it's not something I was ever like afraid of. It just always felt like, I think I grew up, this is fast. I feel like I'm getting into feelings that like I have not really considered. This is great. I love it. I feel like in the sort of Christianity I grew up in, there was a real emphasis on humility and on trusting that God would take care of the future, you know? And I think there's a part of me that always has felt like divination is sort of an attempt to like subvert that trust. I don't know. This is really interesting for me to think about. I feel like I'm not explaining it in like a great way, but yeah, you're like opening new doors for me.
Well, and we can, you know, we may leave this in or we may take this out, but I also will share with you that another former guest last season, Jonathan Coe, was sort of offering that, you know, to strip away, like he basically said, divining is a human right. He felt like a lot of the stripping of that right by the Christian church, you know, in an effort to, you know, control people, you know, was a taking away of that right. And so he's sort of for examining that, you know, for sort of saying like, why is my autonomy being taken away, you know, in that way?
I've had conversations with people about the difference between, or like if there is any difference between divination and prophecy, which is obviously like very prominent in the Bible. And there are like many prophets who are saints. And it's like, well, what's the difference between prophecy and divination? But yeah, I think like the distinction is really interesting because it does feel very blurry, you know?
Do you have any thoughts on what that difference is between prophecy and divination?
You know, I don't. I feel like in the Bible, the prophets were always being spoken to like directly by God. But I also, I'm not going to like sit here on your podcast and say that that's like not possible in like divination, you know? I think it could be. Who am I to say it's not?
Right. So you also write, I'm going to quote you now, quote, in most places, I have tried not to stray too far from the original meanings of the cards, instead teasing out the theological implications of the traditional meanings, end quote. And so I'm assuming there, when you say traditional, that you're meaning Arthur Waite's kind of?
Yes, like Arthur Waite's like pictorial key to the tarot, since I use the Waite Smith deck in the book.
Right. And you also write that, quote, perhaps more than any other tarotist since the Italian Renaissance, Waite came closest to sensing the tarot's origins in Christian allegory, end quote. And so this has kind of been a big topic on my mind because I've been doing a series on the history of the cards, and we just recently did the Smith, Rider, Waite, you know, kind of sequence in history. And so it's interesting as I was thinking about what you were saying, because Waite also, you know, wrote a lot of books about the Jewish Kabbalah. And it's true that the Smith-Waite deck does contain a lot of Christian imagery, but then it also does contain a lot of, you know, Jewish imagery and motifs, and also even some Golden Dawn, you know,
influence
as well. So, you know, how do you hold all of that together? Like, what do you think about all those different influences? Particularly, I guess I'm interested about the Jewish influences in the tarot and how you kind of hold that all together.
Well, I do think of, you know, Judaism is like an Abrahamic faith. And for me, Judaism and Christianity just like fit really well together. And I was actually like really grateful for like a couple of people who read the book ahead of its being published. Because like I obviously grew up in a very Christian environment. And I had some people who read the book who were like, you know, you should probably try to be a little more sensitive about like, the example I'm thinking of right now is with the Eight of Swords. I talk about Job as like this huge figure in Christianity. And one of my readers was like, well, Job was like a huge figure in Judaism before he was like a figure in Christianity. And so for me, I feel like I'm still like constantly learning from like Jewish tarot readers I know about like the influences of Judaism. And I haven't actually read any of Arthur Waite's works on the Kabbalah, though I know like he wrote them. But for me, like, because they're both Abrahamic faiths, like I don't feel a whole lot of tension there. I feel like they fit well together.
One thing that I really appreciated in your history section towards the beginning of the book is the distinction that you make between the way tarot was looked at as possessing, you know, sort of the secrets of the universe during the 18th and 19th century occult revivals versus the secrets of the self that sort of came in during the New Age movement of the 70s. And we just, again, explored that idea in the Shuffling Through History series. So will you sort of talk about that a little bit?
During the occult revivals in France and England in the 18th century, tarot underwent such a transformation, just with the way people viewed it. It was really interesting to me. There were some books that were written on divination, but I feel like it was mostly seen as like this magical tool that really held universal wisdom. And using tarot or interpreting it in the correct way would reveal those secrets to you, which was fascinating to me because I feel like most people I know these days don't really see tarot in that way. Most people I know view it in a more new agey kind of way. Tarot became really popular again, like in the 70s, and people used it more as a tool for self-reflection and, yeah, sort of like learning the secrets of the self. And I feel like there was a big emphasis on Jungian psychology and stuff like that. And that's how I mostly see people use it today.
Yeah, you really helped clarify that for me. I appreciated that chapter. And, you know, it kind of occurs to me that it's a little bit like maybe a literal or figurative interpretation of the Bible, you know, or even mm-hmm. Even the different ways that the Catholic and Protestant church views like the sacrament during communion, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, that's really interesting. Yeah.
I mean, speak about that if you want.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me because like, just with like Catholics view the Eucharist as like a very literal thing, like the actual body and blood of Christ, like on a metaphysical level, it becomes the body and blood of Christ. And most Protestant denominations have a much more symbolic view of it and think of it as like a much more sort of reflective thing. And like, I'm just thinking back to like the Protestant churches I attended as a kid before my family converted to Catholicism. It was always like sort of seen, like when we had communion, it was seen as a time to reflect on Jesus's sacrifice for us, and was just a much more symbolic thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do see parallels between that and, you know, the sort of 18th century view of tarot as like the keeper of like hidden wisdom versus like the new age view of tarot as like, oh, here's your like tool for self-reflection and sort of journeying into your interior self.
Yeah. I mean,
that's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. And you know, as you point out in the book, like if Waite and Pamela Coleman Smith were sort of the more Christian leaning, you know, of those esotericists, mm-hmm. But still coming from that viewpoint of the cards actually carrying, you know, these secrets or sort of having this power on their own, it is mm-hmm. interesting to kind of think, I've never thought about that, but maybe they did view it as having some kind of religious or spiritual power unto itself, you know? Mm-hmm. So you also talk about the way that society today is so addicted and distraction, as you were speaking about earlier, and how we mm-hmm. kind of resist quiet time for self-reflection, hence the title of your book, The Contemplative Tarot, and the fact that interacting with tarot requires us to put down our phones and sit with the cards, you know, for a moment mm-hmm. of reflection. But it was kind of funny as I was imagining that and thinking about that, I was also thinking about how people get really obsessed with buying new decks all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and I was kind of like, I wonder if that is because of our like sort of collective, you know, ADHD and like it's like our way of scrolling is like, let's just keep buying new decks, mm-hmm. you know? And I was also delighted by the point that you make that the randomization of the cards that happens when we shuffle and draw is a kind of escape from that algorithm telling us mm-hmm. what to look at, you know, that we take that power back into our own hands kind of, you know, so will you kind of open that up a little bit?
Yeah, I forgot that I had written about that in the book. I've been mad at the algorithm for so long.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think a lot about, like, I obviously, like, I do spend a lot of time on Instagram, and I think a lot about the internet and how, you know, my experience of the internet is specifically tailored to me and my own interests and how hard it is for me to break out of that and find people or interests or ideas outside of like whatever you know, Instagram wants to put in front of me. Like, I think back to when I was a kid and I would go to like the library and just like wander through the stacks in the library and find all kinds of like weird books that I would never find otherwise. And it's hard for me to find experiences like that anymore. Mm-hmm. And tarot is like one way that I can do it, because there are 78 cards. And I, you know, I shuffle them every day and I pull a different one every day. And I do feel like sometimes I will pull like the same card, like really regularly for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of other tarot readers have that experience as well. But I also know that it is like truly random. And for me, that feels really good and refreshing, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever, this is something that I think about a lot. Do you ever, you know, wonder about your own ability to stay expansive with the meanings that are trying to come through, you know, sort of similar to what you're saying about being able to wander down the library? I mean, what occurs to me in that situation is if you come across a random book, you're getting in the mind of someone different, you know, mm-hmm. when you read that book. But when you pull a card, you're still in your own mind, you know? Mm-hmm. So do you ever think about that? Are there ways that you try to stay expansive about the messages that are coming through, just to make sure, again, that you're not in your own bubble, just in a different way, you know? Mm-hmm.
I feel like reading for me, like reading like actual books, like really widely helps a lot. But I also like, I have been thinking about this lately because I just wrote this book and I wrote like a reflection for all 78 cards. And I find now that I feel a little bit stuck in like the reflections that I wrote for the book. Right. Like I will pull a card and I'll think about, you know, whatever I wrote for like the Ace of Cups or the Seven of Wands. And I do think that, you know, tarot is much more expansive than like, you know, my own personal interpretations that I wrote in the book. And I tried to make that clear in the book that like, these are my own interpretations. And like, I want it to be a jumping off point, not like the rule of law for like, you know, Christian tarot. But yeah, I have felt just sort of like, to be totally honest, and like just kind of a rut with like the meanings of the cards lately. And have been even considering just like sort of like putting my tarot deck away for even maybe like 6 months and just like reading other things and thinking about other things and then coming back to it and seeing like how I feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very healthy. You know, I think mm-hmm. like I certainly go through, you know, ups and downs with how often I'm using the cards, you know, mm-hmm. and any practice I think that gets stale in that way, you know, like wants to have a reinvigoration of some kind, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So in a section titled Self-Reflection, you write, quote, "In the Christian life, knowledge of self and knowledge of God are deeply intertwined," end quote. And this made me think about something that I really believe fundamentally, which is the importance of learning to love yourself. And to be honest, you know, I've often found that concept fundamentally a little bit at odds with certain Christian teachings that I was raised mm-hmm. with, you know, that sort of place a huge emphasis on the fundamentally flawed nature of humanity and our reliance on a God that is sort of outside of us, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when I think about that, I'm just sort of like, what is the point? I mean, I don't understand why God would really test us in that way, or like, I just mm-hmm. don't understand the point of that, you know. But, you know, when you put it this way, when you say knowledge of self and knowledge of God are deeply intertwined, and then you also write in the next paragraph that we all have a deep yearning for God, it sounds very close to saying that to know yourself is to know God, because you are God and God is you. And perhaps mm-hmm. we yearn to know God because we yearn to know ourselves. You know, is that what mm-hmm. you're getting at? I don't want to put words in your mouth or misunderstand mm-hmm. what you were trying to say, but I was curious if you are hinting at a knowing of self and sort of that God, that we are God, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that right now, like one of the fundamental beliefs of my theology that was not always true, but that is true now, is that like every person who exists in the world is like a miracle. Like, I think the fact that I exist is a miracle. I think the fact that you exist is like a miracle. And I think that God loves us so much, maybe even more than we could ever love ourselves. And I think that part of being a Christian is learning how to be more like that loving God. And so I think for me, learning to love myself as much as God loves me, that is like a fundamental part of being a Christian. And I think it does help me to know God better.
And one of my favorite sentences in the whole book is, quote, "Teaching a person how to use tarot feels like teaching a person how to pray. Both are highly subjective. What works for one person might not work for another," end quote. So will you just kind of talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So I think that's at the beginning of the chapter that has different sort of like ways to use tarot in like a prayerful way. Like, I feel like every person I know with whom I talk to about, you know, their spiritual lives, their relationship with God, has a different relationship with God than I do. Mm-hmm. And a different way of relating to the divine. And I feel the same way about tarot readers. Like, I feel like the people I know who use tarot, who read tarot, all have such different, unique perspectives on it and different ways of using it.
Yeah, it makes me want to ask you, you know, just a simple question, which is, how has tarot changed or informed, you know, your relationship with God?
I think it's made it much more intentional. I just like blurted that out and I'm now like, what do I mean by that? But I feel like it's a prayer practice that I've really been able to stick to, and I think has made me much more curious about it. And also it has made it feel much more personal. Like, I mostly grew up Catholic, and Catholics have a great tradition of sort of public prayer and universal prayer, and like rote prayer, stuff like the rosary and like the prayers you say in mass. But I feel like one of the places where Catholicism sort of like falls behind a lot of Protestant denominations is that there's not always so much an emphasis on like a personal relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And for me, tarot really gave me like a space to sort of explore the idea of like a more personal relationship with God.
If you enjoy hearing conversations like this one, please consider supporting In Search of Tarot by becoming a member of our Patreon community. There you'll receive weekly mystic missives discussing any number of philosophical, tarological concepts, along with discounts to upcoming classes and workshops, and invitations to attend our monthly tarot hangs on Zoom. The financial support we receive through Patreon is the only way that we're able to pay our incredible guests who join us week after week to share their knowledge and life stories with all of you. We are so appreciative of our existing patrons' generous support, and we invite you to join them at patreon.com/insearchoftarot. So you do something really unique in the book, where you separate out the court cards at the end and you enter into each one through the lens of a particular saint. And like I was saying earlier, something I really appreciated is that not every saint's actual historical gender necessarily matches up with the pronouns that you use as you talk about them. And, you know, I really appreciated that. So I'm wondering two things about this, and we'll take them sort of one at a time. First, I'm wondering if you'll share a little bit about how you chose these saints. And I'm wondering if these were existing connections that you've worked with for a long time, or if these were new concepts for the book.
I'll answer the second question first. Some of the connections were ones that I had had for a long time. But when I decided that I wanted to like do this for the book, like pair a saint with each court card, I sort of became much more intentional about sort of pairing them all up. And it was really fun, like maybe like the most difficult, but also the most fun part of the book. Mm-hmm. Because I used to really struggle with the court cards. And I feel like a lot of people struggle with the court cards.
Yeah.
Partly because they are like traditionally like very heavily gendered, but also because it can just be hard to sort of fit them into the rest of the system of tarot, mm-hmm. I feel like. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it gave me a chance to really think deeply about the personalities of each of the court cards, and also like really break down the hierarchy of the court cards, because I feel like that's something I might have talked about in our previous episode together. Like I just really dislike the hierarchy of the court cards, mm-hmm. Where like the page is always the lowest and the king is always the highest, because yeah. I feel like they all have things to teach us. But I found as I started, it's good to be simple and childlike.
You know, something overall when I read the book that kind of stood out to me is it comes across, and I'm curious to hear, you know, how you feel. It comes across a little bit as, you know, you say things a lot in the book about life being really plain and simple and mm-hmm. tedious, and it feels like you're emphasizing a mundanity, you know, to life, which is definitely mm-hmm. true, but I guess also surprised me a little bit, you know, in reading the book. And mm-hmm. so I just wanted to ask you about that. You know, I wanted to ask you about if you do sort of have that view, or, you know, like where that comes from. You know, I was just mm-hmm. curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that just comes from my own personal experience of life. Like I grew up reading the stories of the saints, and most of the saints have like really dramatic lives and do really dramatic things. And so I think, especially as a teenager, I had this idea that like to be a good Christian or to like be a saint someday, like I really needed to do something like truly extraordinary for God. And I had this idea that I had to like work really hard to prove myself as like worthy of sainthood. And as I've become older, like my life, like my day-to-day life is not that interesting. Like I have two kids and I like mostly like take care of my kids. And I don't know, I think I really learned to let go of this idea that I need to like save the world in order to like be a good Christian, you know, mm-hmm. That it's possible to sort of commune with God and to be like a faithful Christian and a good person within the confines of like a very ordinary life. But I'm glad you brought that up, because like I hadn't really considered it, but now that I'm thinking about it, like yeah, I did write about that a lot like through the book.
I started to circle words. I was like, this yeah. is a theme. There's a theme here.
It's a theme. It's a, yeah. like a theme like in my personal life that right. I guess came out like in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, what you're talking about, I mean, there is an emphasis in Christianity on like converting people and mm-hmm. this pressure. I don't know if that's exactly the same in the Catholic Church. Is that the same in the Catholic Church as Protestantism?
Not really. There's not as okay. big an emphasis on like evangelization and like going out and like converting people.
Okay. So that like kind of leads me into my sort of second to last question. I was curious to hear how you know, in this age when so much is changing and so much needs to change, you know, and mm-hmm. there is a lot of social upheaval and climate, you know, issues and things, how do you marry a contemplative life with staying engaged in the world?
I read a book by Edith Stein last month. She's a Catholic saint. And she has this quote about how You should give the first hour of your day to God and then let everything flow from that. And so, you know, I mean, I guess like as a Catholic, I do believe that there are some people who are called to like truly contemplative lives, like people who become nuns or monks and they spend their whole lives in prayer. I think that like most people are not called to that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's really like practically speaking, it's really helpful to have a daily spiritual practice of prayer and tarot, and to let that sort of ground me in my day, but to not spend all of my time in that space. Like I definitely do not feel called to that. And so I think it's important to have that groundedness and that rootedness in a spiritual practice. But I think it's possible to then take that sort of contemplative centeredness out into the world.
Yeah. So the podcast is called, you know, In Search of Tarot, and mm-hmm. This is our fifth season. And I kind of wanted to come up with a common question to close out with. And the question that I came up with is, what are you searching for right now?
I think I'm searching for more quiet in my life. And I think less reactiveness. I think I've spent, especially like because of book promotion and stuff, I've spent a lot of the last year or so on social media, much more than I've ever been on social media before. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of good in social media. But I also think that for me, it's not always super helpful just in terms of like actually being able to like make changes in the world and like be a good person in the world. And so I think I'm looking for less of that and more thoughtfulness and more like smallness, I think. Like sort of figuring out how I can help people and what changes I can make like in my own community.
Yeah. I'm with you. And I think a lot of us are with you on that right mm-hmm. now. I think a lot of people are feeling that. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you for this incredible conversation. Thank you for writing this book. I really encourage everyone to read it. It is beautiful and provides a lot of, you know, interesting new takes on tarot, whether you, you know, identify as Christian or not. Will you tell people how they can follow you on social media as we talk about social media and also, you know, buy your book?
Yeah. Well, you can buy the book wherever you like to buy books. It's being sold everywhere, as far as I know. And you can find me mostly on Instagram these days. I'm blessed.vigil on Instagram. I'm also on Twitter, Blessed Vigil, but I'm not on Twitter very often. So Instagram is really the best place to find me.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Brittany, thank you so much for coming back and talking with me again.
Thank you for inviting me. I love chatting with you.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's birdgerhl_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.